Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. This is Senior Chief Rob Burrows, Director for the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, Homeward Bound Military Family Support Services, Silver Star Veterans and Widows, and the Battlefield Expressions PTSD Art Therapy. Boy, you know, every time we turn around, we just have more and more programs that we are working with. And right now, if you're not familiar, we are preparing. We are actually a member of the National Commemoration of the 50th Anniversary of the Vietnam War. And we are being a national partner. We are working with that commission also operates and takes care of the Vietnam Wall and the Mobile Wall. And because of the commemoration, we are part of the program of honoring our Vietnam veterans this year. I mean, we should honor our Vietnam veterans all the time, but the museum is the partners to be part of this. And part of that commemoration is for us to be able to have an official ceremony and to have a free luncheon to our Vietnam veterans. And we are going to hold that the same weekend of the Wall of Remembrance, which will be at the Northern California Veterans Museum property there at 4659 Ronda Road, where the museum is going to be built. And that is going to be July 28th through August 1st. So it's going to be 4 days, 24 hours a day. And the museum is bringing that in. And we have acquired several partners to help us to offset the cost. Our estimated cost is about $12,000 to bring this wall into our community. And we are looking for businesses in our community or private individuals, along with other veterans organizations, to help offset these costs. And some of the organizations that are working with us are CVAC, which is Shasta County Veterans Affiliate Council, AMVETS, American Veterans Program, the American Legion. Dave Cockrell, as an individual, has donated funds. Eagles Landing has donated funds to this program. The Fleet Reserve Association, and we're looking to some other military organizations to help. But we're looking for businesses to help donate in-kind donations as far as some equipment work that needs to be done with some grading and gravel and things like that, and to run some underground power. And then also we're looking for individuals to help sponsor the Vietnam Veterans luncheon that we're going to have and to promote the program. So it's going to be 4 days full of all different types of events. Saturday evening, which is the 31st, we're going to be having the gala event, which we were going to display and show all of the Battlefield Expressions artwork from our military veterans and from their families. And that will be open there to the public. And then also we will be having the ceremony on Sunday morning, which is 10 a.m. But we're also going to have a sunrise service Sunday morning. And that sunrise service is going to be there on the property where the wall is. When the sun comes from the east and it rises over the top of Mount Lassen, we have a beautiful, unrestricted view of Mount Lassen from that property. And it's just a spectacular sight as the sun starts to crest over the top of Mount Lassen. And you see the rays of sunlight. The mountain is highlighted in shadows and white. Right now we have snow on it, but it's highlighted, and the sun is like a starburst as it shows around the mountain and then starts to come across the top of Mount Lassen. It's just one of the most beautiful sights that we have in Northern California. And that will be Sunday morning around 6 a.m., probably starting at about 5:30 in the morning. And so we'll have the sunrise service at 10 a.m. We'll have the Vietnam Veterans Ceremony. It'll be about 2 hours. And then the luncheon for the Vietnam veterans and their families. It's open to the public. The public has a cost and expense to help share cost that. But it is free to our veterans and our Vietnam veterans to say thank you for their service as part of the commemoration. I want to read to you the proclamation that President Trump had written here for the Vietnam veterans for this commemoration. Today I lead our nation in a somber reflection as we continue the 13th commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the Vietnam War that began in 2012. We salute our brave Vietnam veterans who, in service to our nation and in defense of our liberty, fought gallantly against the spread of communism and defended the freedom of the Vietnamese people. 50 years ago, in 1967, nearly 500,000 American troops served in South Vietnam, along with approximately 850,000 troops of our allies. Today, during Veterans and Military Families Month, as the federal government observes Veterans Day and Memorial Day, I am in Vietnam alongside business and political leaders to advance the interests of America and to promote peace and stability in this region and around the world. I cherish this opportunity to recall with humility the sacrifices of our veterans made for our freedom and our nation's strength. During this commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the Vietnam War, we embrace our responsibility to help our veteran and our veterans, our Vietnam veterans and their families heal from the heavy toll of war. We remember more than 58,000 whose names are memorialized on a black granite wall in our nation's capital for having borne the heaviest cost of this war. We also pay tribute to the brave patriots who suffered as prisoners of war, and we with a steadfast in our commitment not to rest until we account for the 1,253 heroes who have not yet returned to American soil. To ensure the sacrifices of the 9 million heroes who served during this difficult chapter of our country's history are remembered for generations to come, I signed into law the Vietnam War Veterans Recognition Act of 2017 of the 50th anniversary of the Vietnam War. And every March 29th thereafter, we will honor all those who answered our nation's call to duty. We vow to never again confuse personal disapproval of war with prejudices against those who honorably wear the uniform of our armed forces. With conviction, our nation pledges our enduring respect, our continuing care, and our everlasting commitment to all Vietnam veterans. We applaud the thousands of local, state, and national organizations, businesses, and government entities that have already partnered with the federal government in commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the Vietnam War. Because of their remarkable leadership and dedication, countless Vietnam veterans and throughout their families have been personally and publicly thanked and honored in ceremonies in towns and cities throughout our country. During my administration, I promised to continue coordinated efforts to recognize all Vietnam veterans during the Vietnam War for their service and sacrifice, and to provide them with the heartfelt acknowledgement and gratitude that they and their families so richly deserve. Now, therefore, I, Donald Trump, President of the United States of America, by virtue of the authority vested in me by the Constitution and the laws of the United States, do hereby confirm and commit the commitment of the nation to the commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the Vietnam War, which began on Memorial Day in 2012, and will continue through Veterans Day 2025. I call upon all Americans to offer each of our Vietnam veterans and their families a thank you on behalf of the nation, both privately and during public ceremonies and programs across our nation. Signed, Donald Trump. And I want to just say thank you to Donald Trump for being able to step up to the plate and saying thank you to our Vietnam veterans and being able to make sure that we commemorate these individuals who served and who gave their lives and sacrificed and came home to the hate of certain individuals in this nation. It's just, I was a young boy then. I was not old enough to serve. I was 12 years old in 1975. And so my brother served during Vietnam on the USS Coral Sea in the United States Navy. Yeah, but I did not have that opportunity at that time. And I served when I was of age and had the opportunity to. The commemoration objectives for the Vietnam commemoration. Number one, to thank and honor veterans of the Vietnam War, including personnel who are held as prisoners of war or listed as missing in action, for their service and sacrifice on behalf of the United States, to thank and honor the families of these veterans. To highlight the service of the armed forces during the Vietnam War and the contributions of federal agencies and governmental and non-governmental organizations that served with or in support of the armed forces. To pay tribute to the contributions made on the home front by the people of the United States during the Vietnam War. To highlight the advances in technology, science, and medicine related to military research conducted during the Vietnam War. And to recognize the contributions and sacrifice made by the Allies of the United States during the Vietnam War. It's a privilege for the Northern California Veterans Museum to be a partner with the commemoration to honor our Vietnam veterans. And we want you to be a part of that. July 28th through August 1st this summer. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
Hey guys, I'm Bob the Drop. Welcome to my podcast. Do you like water? If you do, you're going to love me. I'm pure and simple. I'm talking refreshing. Yeah. Spent 500 years in a glacier. Boy, was that cold. I never was and never will be tap water. Nope. bottled at the source, the base of Mount Shasta. Yep, pure and simple. Naturally the best. You can try me by calling 1-800-922-6227. Mount Shasta Spring Water.
Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance is now open at 3673 Eureka Way. Physical therapists Kevin Elo and Rachel Lang have a combined 29 years of experience in helping those who've suffered orthopedic injuries, strains, and sprains. Kevin has worked with the USA Gymnastics team, NFL Combine, and professional BMX riders. He's also helped members of Cirque du Soleil get back into action. Rachel works closely with seniors and is also a group fitness instructor and adept at returning people to an active lifestyle. Both Kevin and Rachel at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance are accepting new clients. Give them a call today, 530-533-5030. If you are in need of physical therapy, talk to the experts at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance at 3673 Eureka Way. Call 530-533-5030. That's 530-533-5030 today.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Hi, I'm Arielle Winter. If you're anything like me, your pets are not only your best friends, they're part of your family. American Humane, which has been rescuing animals like Cleo here for more than 100 years, has life-saving tips that can make a big difference in a disaster. When disaster strikes, you want to protect your whole family, including your pets. To help keep your family safe and help our best friends in their worst times, find tips at AmericanHumane.org.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. This is Senior Chief Rob Burrows, United States Navy Seabees, retired. And my special guest this morning is my son, Will Burrows, who served in the Marine Corps during the Iraq war at the same time I did, just a year or two behind myself out of Fallujah, Iraq. And they're out visiting us right now, his wife Courtney and their two daughters, Timberland and Aspen. And so I asked Will to come and be a part of the program to share his story this morning, father and son program. Good morning, son.
Good morning.
Corporal Will Burroughs, United States Marine Corps, and you were part of the Cat Red team with the 1-7.
That's correct.
Can you tell us what the 1-7 and the Cat Red is?
So it'd be 1st Battalion, 7th Marine Corps Regiment, and it goes ahead and breaks down. You have Animal Company, Baker Company, and Suicide Charlie, and then you have the Weapons Company, which supports with heavy weapons. And inside of the Heavy Weapons or Weapons Company, we had Cat Red, White, and Blue, and snipers. And I was a part of Cat Red, which is combined anti-armor team, which is basically a combination of machine guns and heavy anti-armor missiles. And
you were a tow gunner.
Yep.
And so what was the designation for that?
Just anti-armor missileman.
Just anti-armor.
Yep. If it's heavy, we get rid of it.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, once a Marine, always a Marine. You just spit it out like you had just talked to somebody about it. It's still in the Marine Corps like 10 minutes ago.
At one point, you were wrong if you didn't know, and sometimes it just doesn't go away.
It never goes away, I think, for Marines. It's so drilled in so hard. Hey, you know, I know that other people probably know a little bit about our background with our family, but I want you to tell us a little bit about why you chose to go in the Corps, some of the stories behind that, but why you chose to go in the military yourself.
You know, it was something I'd always wanted to do. I felt it was something that my family did, and it was probably one of our longest standing family professions for sure. We have a long family history of having served this country, and I felt like that was one of the things I needed to do. Timing-wise, I was gonna join the Navy initially, and and I had multiple times I had spent going down to the recruiter and getting everything set up, and being told I should do this, and still wanting to do something else, and I wasn't ready to go, and I had had people I'd gone to high school with that wanted to go, and there's a buddy of mine that we were going to join together, and then he didn't want to go, and then so I kind of postponed going, but I still wanted to go. And then when it came down to it, one day, you know, I went to go, and the Navy wasn't in the recruiting office, and I'd just gotten laid off of work, and I poked my head in the door next door to the Marine Corps, and you know, I was pretty upset at being laid off, and I had walked probably 5 to 7 miles across the town to the recruiting office to go ahead, and I had already had everything set up with the Navy, but they were at a pulley function and the door was locked, and I poked my head next door to the Marine Corps and I said, "Hey, where are these guys at?" And he said, "They should be here, you know, a little bit later. Why don't you come in and have a seat?" And I think
it was a great vacuum.
It was a vacuum. The Marine Corps door was open, and I walked in there. And I think it was just, just like buying a car. Don't go buy a car because you're angry and you want to buy a car. You know, don't make a big decision like that because you're angry and you're just gung ho and ready to go. But at the same time, I'll have not have had the experiences I did if I didn't poke my head in that door.
Well, it was a great loss to the United States Navy.
It was a great loss to the U.S. Navy. You know, everything worked out, and I often wonder what my Navy experience would have been like if I had gone, you know, because I had an SWCC seat, and I had a bud seat, and I'd had it locked in, you know, and I'd already done my swim quals, and it was just sitting there.
That was
on
a SEAL team seat, right?
Yep, yeah. I had a SEAL team. I didn't have a SEAL team seat. I had a bud seat. I walked away from that just due to me being impatient, and I'm still impatient, but, I was just so ready to go, and I was so fed up, with what I was dealing with at the time that it was time to go, and I was ready for the next boat to go anywhere. So, you know,
I remember getting the phone call, "Dad, I joined the Marine Corps." So yeah, I thought you're going in the Navy.
Oh yeah, no, that was, I still wonder to this day, every now and then it comes back. I'll find, you know, and I had found my swim qual and everything like that from my, from when I wasn't so much a poolie so much as I had actually just gone through with it, and I wasn't on the delayed entry program or anything like that. I just met the criteria and, was sitting on it and just hadn't pulled the trigger yet. And I hadn't even talked to Courtney, who is now my wife. I just ran down there and laid it all out on the table and was like, where are we going? And I ended up joining the Marine Corps as Infantry Open, which is an 03XX, and went to boot camp at MCRD San Diego. And then after MCRD San Diego, I ended up going to SOI down there in Pendleton, and they decided that I was smart enough I didn't have to walk. And so, you know, they were like, well, not quite good enough to be an explosives engineer or an assaultman, but, you know, you'd probably make a good tow gunner, you know. So I went ahead and ended up going to anti-armor school there at SOI. And
yeah, you'd look at sniper school also, didn't you?
Yeah, no, and I had done the NDOC, and you know, I did pretty good, and it, you know, and that was after I was already in. I'd already been in 2 years and gone to Iraq and come back, and I'd done the NDOC. And I was doing good, you know, everything was good. But at the end of the day, the top two people out of the 11, and it got dwindled down to the last five, and the top two people were guaranteed a school seat to go to Scout Sniper School. And at the end of the deal, you know, I made top three. I didn't get a seat, but in the end of the day, only one of them ended up getting a seat because the other guy, they just, you know, they'd promised two seats, and the guy in second place didn't even get a seat, you know. And if not for maybe my impatience, as, you know, again, my impatience and maybe a little bit to do with my eyesight, I'd have probably done better. But in the end, even if I had come out second, I still wouldn't have gotten that seat because he ended up not getting it either. So
when you talk about going, being a tow gunner, explain to us what a tow missile is and what a tow gunner actually means.
So basically what you have is a tow missile, and you have javelins, but we'll talk about the tow because the tow is the heavy anti-armor missile. Basically what it is it's a tube-launched, optically tracked, wire command link guided missile. So you're attached to this missile and you're driving it. You're steering this thing. You're piloting this missile the entire way. And so you'll kick it out of the tube. And, once you've locked on, and essentially you're not locked onto it. You still have to steer it. But what you do have to do is close the tracking gates, because it does kind of offer you some assistance, before the smoke clears, because you can't see anything once you launch it. So once the smoke clears, it releases, and now you're on the wire, and you're essentially guiding this thing down range, out to 4,200 meters. And, you know, you've got crosshairs and whatnot, and everything's laser bore sighted, and you're using thermal, and
that's almost 3 miles out.
Yeah.
Yeah. What amazes me is you have a spool of wire that's electrically connected. And it doesn't bind up as it's traveling. What is it? Is it supersonic?
I would say that it's, I mean, cause you don't get a sonic boom, so it's traveling subsonic, but it's still, and it's traveling on kinetic energy, because that, the flight engine is only going for 2 or 3 seconds.
So then it's just,
it's all kinetic energy after that. And then, when it hits, there's no payload in the missile. What it does is it creates an explosively formed projectile, excuse me. And what it's doing is it's crushing a brass alloy into a hot, highly dense piece of slag.
I didn't realize it was an EFP with wings.
Yep, it's an EFP with wings. And what happens is when it detonates, it throws that, and it slags around the inside of the tank. And when it does that, you're lighting off whatever the tank has inside of it for munitions. You're not blowing the tank up. The tank's blowing up because you lit it on fire. So what you do is you use a machine gun to button the tank up because you want it to be compressed. And now that they've locked all the hatches, because they don't want to get peppered with machine guns, what happens is that brass bronze alloy goes into the tank and lights all the munitions off. And now that it's a compressed area, it detonates in it, and it obliterates the armor. So.
Yeah, I've watched some of those. You sent me some different videos and things like that, and it's pretty amazing. In fact, when they took out one of Saddam's sons, I think it was Kisei, they used a tow missile to fire into the building where he was at. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. Corporal William Burroughs is our guest this morning. We'll be right back.
30 years ago, Simpson University arrived in Reading with a promise to serve the North State. Warmly welcomed by this far Northern California community, we forged lasting partnerships, serving our neighbors locally as well as globally. Building on our promise, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Our promise to be the gateway to world service begins in our backyard. Learn more about Reading's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
Slow down. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
Hey, Northern California, this is Nigel Skeet, and starting on Saturday, June 22nd at 8 a.m., I'll be hosting a new weekly California Adventure District radio show. There are so many great things happening in our region, and I'll be bringing them all to you every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. I'll have guests from our 12 surrounding counties, including Humboldt, Siskiyou, Trinity, Lassen, Mendocino, and many more. You will be able to plan for a great summer and fall right here in the California Adventure District. Join me every Saturday morning at 8 a.m.
What is a hero? A hero serves when no one else is ready to. A hero helps everyone, never asking for any praise. They stand ready to do whatever is needed. They have picked up the mantle of heroism when we have needed it the most, and their tireless dedication can never be appreciated enough. We want to thank all of our local heroes. We could not get through these times without their courage. We thank you for everything that you do.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Filato, broker and co-owner of The Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard or visit us at EstateGranite.com.
Aloha, this is Kevin, operations manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price and after a few months realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
Plane finally landed was kiss the ground. Next thing I did was to go find my friends down at the old hangout. We drank some beer and talked a lot about old times. But when the booze finally hit Billy Joe Grimes, he said, I don't know what it is. You seem different to me. I said, I just came back from a place where they hated me and everything I stand for. A land where our brothers are dying for others who don't even care anymore. took a walk through the neighborhood. I thought it's been so long since I've been in a place where everything is good. People laughing and children were playing. And as I watched them, I found myself praying. Lord, keep them safe here at home in the land of the free.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and my guest this morning is my son, Corporal Will Burroughs, who served in the United States Marine Corps, and I served in Iraq in the United States Navy Seabees from 2006 to 2007 with the Marine Corps. We were attached to one MEF forward, which one Marine Expeditionary Force forward out of Fallujah, and we ran all of our convoys for the Marine Corps. We took all of the assets across the Al-Anbar province, which is the western part of Iraq, to all of the different combat outposts called COPs, and to make sure that the Marines were taken care of while we were there. We hauled beans, band-aid, bullets, toilet paper, water, concertina wire, sandbags, you name it, we took it, because if we didn't get it there, the Marine Corps didn't have it. And then my son joined the Marine Corps while I was gone, and then came back, and he served in Iraq in 2009 and 2010. We literally walked the same streets 1 year, 2 years apart from each other in Iraq. And it's not very often that you find a father and son who served in the same location during a war time frame, unless you go all the way back to World War II or possibly Korea. And so I'm proud to have my son here this morning, son. I want to say thank you for your service. I love you.
Thank you. I love you, too.
It's just important for me to have you tell your story and to honor you as a Marine, a United States Marine, and to be able to share your story in our family. And so when we were talking a little bit about the TOW missiles and the rockets and things that you were trained to do, tell us a little bit about your preparation for deployment and then your deployment into Iraq.
We'd been in the conflict long enough, I would say, just over the entire scheme of the entire OIF, that we had actually had pretty good pre-deployment training. There is an entire training ground down in 29 Palms, California, committed to replicating the OIF experience. Plenty of contractors down there to make sure that you get blown up in simulation enough times to understand what you need to do, and enough scenarios. They'd come up with enough scenarios and had enough happen to where they'd come back and they'd recreate scenarios. You as a unit have to work through the scenarios so that when you get there, the muscle memory is already in place to ensure that everything gets taken care of exactly as it should.
I know that when I was in Okinawa there at Camp Hansen, we had built, the Seabees had built a combat town there for the Marine Corps. And they had sent us through that after we had done some of the repairs and things like that. And I remember being part of a team that was an assault team. We were going through the different buildings and everything else. And I was the tail gunner at the end of the team that was going through the different buildings. And I wasn't watching my back close enough. And I turned around and there was a rifle in my face and boom, I was dead, just like that. And the reality of how fast and how close that happened really made a difference. So I never forgot that when I got ready to go to Iraq when I was there with my team. You've always got to have somebody watching your six all the time. There's no chance for you to do it without, because once you take out your tail gunner, he can just work and take every other individual out throughout the entire team.
No, the rear is very important.
And I learned a valuable lesson to stay alive and to keep my men alive. And so that's exactly what they were teaching you there at Pendleton.
Yep, down, yep. They had one in Pendleton.
We built the one in Pendleton also.
Yeah, and then they had the one in Pendleton, and then they had a very large desert training area down in 29 Palms, which we used frequently. Spent a lot of time out in the field there. you know, going over everything we needed to. And not only that, I mean, it was really hard to catch the desert on fire. So they let us do all kinds of things out there you wouldn't get to do in places like Pendleton or back over there on the East Coast in Lejeune and whatnot. Just due to the nature of the terrain, it made it a lot easier to get better training, or maybe even just the right training.
So when I was deployed over there, we were there in Camp Fallujah, which was where the Marine headquarters were at that time. And you were stationed, they were closing down Fallujah when I was leaving. So you were actually at Bahariya, which was next door to Camp Fallujah.
Yep. They had retrograded and, there was no longer a COP in Fallujah. They had been turned back over to the IPs and the IA, which would be the Iraqi police, Iraqi army. And we would frequent visits to them to gather intel, do SSE, which is sensitive site exploitation, go ahead and see, how their presence, and lack of our presence has affected the region or the area, or the city, wherever it may be. And we frequented visits to towns, did a lot of moving of, high value personnel or VIPs. A lot of post-debt on IEDs and whatnot. Anytime something big would happen and somebody was hurt, essentially Cat Red, because we ran out of armored threats, prior to my arrival, we put our TOW missiles away and basically carried medium and heavy machine guns, and actually acted more as a security and a police force in Iraq because of the retrograde, because we were at that point, the U.S. was preparing to pull occupation out. And, I was actually sitting in a chow hall at Bahariya when they announced who the next president was going to be. And everything changed while we were there, almost overnight. After the presidential change. So,
well, I know that when we were in Fallujah, Iraq, during that time frame, when we first got there in August of 2006, we were witnessing over between August 6th and Christmas, which is December 23rd for us. We came off the road at that time. We witnessed over 300 IED detonations. Just our team had witnessed over that many, because I had hash marks across my windshield with a wax pencil. And my windshield was covered so heavily that you can hardly see through it. And by the time we left in May of 2007, we were down to maybe finding an IED every week, every 2 weeks, because the threat had been taken out. During that time, the 25th MEU, Marine Expeditionary Unit, had come in, and they had wiped out all of the sniper hides and everything else of the insurgents, and eliminated that threat. And so it had really reduced from what we looked at the very beginning. We were finding 14, 16 IEDs a day. And then as we left, you would find, which is an improvised explosive device, maybe an IED every 2 weeks. And so I'm glad that when they came in, they were helped to take some of that threat away from you when you arrived.
Well, and I mean, and maybe so, but I mean, they can emplace these things so fast. It only takes 20 minutes,
or less.
So, I mean, anything that was there, essentially had changed overnight. And I mean, everything would change overnight. So things that were clear were not clear. Things that were not clear were clear because somebody had run over them and already gotten rid of them that night. Not to say they were placed that night, but, it was operating space.
Every single day was flux. Everything was
so
in flux.
We just assumed everything that was going to be bad all the time. So eventually we came out with a lot of wins because we had already expected everything to be bad. So, it made us harder to touch because we were just so on edge all the time. We were constantly changing routes we used, never using the same routes, staging in different areas, using lots of thermal, similar to what you'd see if you're playing your video games, Battlefield and whatnot, but using thermal to watch people, to watch dangerous areas, to go ahead and we were monitoring everything, and it made it really hard to get one up on you when you were spending so much time prior to leaving the wire just making sure that the sites hadn't been compromised overnight.
Hard targets survive, soft targets don't.
They do. And to some extent, it was disappointing because you spent so much time trying to keep it up on it. It seemed like you weren't touchable. And then somebody would be complacent somewhere. They just weren't doing the right things. And they'd end up getting hurt. And then you'd go end up, you know, you'd go out there after EOD cleared it and you'd be picking people up off the ground. And, you know, and they had actually, you know, I recall you saying that you had your vehicle number. They had us pull all the numbers off the vehicles and anything that you could use to differentiate Marine Corps vehicles from Army vehicles off, because they wouldn't touch us. They'd leave us alone because, I mean, we'd get there and we were angry all the time. We were mean. We'd clear the streets. We'd be, you know, we'd have muzzles up and we'd keep people out of everywhere. So
our guest this morning is Will Burroughs, my son, Corporal Will Burroughs, United States Marine Corps. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burroughs with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5 and 1460 AM.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
A Moment in History by KCNR and historian Donnie Smith. The town of Delta was established by the California and Oregon Railroad in 1884 at the confluence of the Sacramento River and Dog Creek. Railroad officials turned the site into a temporary railhead terminal, laid out a town site, and gave it a more dignified name of Delta because of the similarities of the town site terrain and the Greek letter Delta. Reading and Shasta merchants flocked to the area to open stores, believing it would be another red-hot railhead town like Reading. Delta soon thrived, but almost disappeared as fast as it had appeared. What little remained became a stopover for steam engines to take on water for the rest of the climb through the canyon. Delta still exists today as a very small, quiet community. This moment in history was brought to you by KCNR and Shasta County historian Dottie Smith. For more stories like this, find Dottie Smith on Amazon or at the Shasta Historical Society.
Coming who we are.
never forgets what I lost. Wake me up when September ends.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. And it's this morning, my son, Will Burroughs, is Corporal William Burroughs, United States Marine Corps, served in Iraq. And right after I did, in 2006 and 7, I served. He served in 9 and 10. And so we have a very nice common, I would say nice. It's a reality of experiencing walking the same streets in a foreign country under fire by an enemy. And I served everywhere with the Marine Corps. Everything I have on my uniform is the EGA, which is the Eagle, Globe, and Anchor. And that's from serving with the Marine Corps in the thick of it. And it's a privilege to have my son as a Marine Corps Marine, and to be able to know where he served and served honorably, and to be able to come back. Now, we talked a little bit about Bahariya, and we talked about that being right there next to Fallujah. And we've only got like 12 minutes left, so talk about the finishing up your deployment and then coming back, and maybe some of the school that you were able to use with your GI Bill.
On our way out of Iraq, basically, we just went ahead and we were going to be one of the last units there. So one of the things we were tasked with doing, so we had, like I said, we had just changed presidencies, and one of the things that wasn't going to happen was a lot of the things that we had taken over there as a nation during this conflict, we weren't bringing them back. There was things that they were going to pass down to the IAs and the IPs, and there was things that they couldn't have that were sensitive to and proprietary to how we do what we do. And we destroyed them in place. We destroyed billions of dollars in equipment because they didn't want to pay the shipping for the Navy and the Air Force to bring it back. So we were destroying weapons. We were destroying optics. We were destroying comms. We were destroying armor, body armor.
Everything that you were forced to take care of while you were there.
Everything that we were...
You'd have been court-martialed if you had lost
it. A lot of the things that you would have been... maybe not court martial, but a lot of the things that, it was so important that you took care of, we destroyed in place, because they didn't want to bring it back. I'd have paid for shipping for half the stuff. I mean, come on. Anyways, we destroyed a lot of it in place, and, it broke my heart, but, you know, that's one of the things we were assigned to do. And, so we destroyed a lot of equipment. And then we went to TQ for the spool down.
Altecatum.
Altecatum. And then we spooled down for 20, 30 days, and then we came home, went on post-deployment leave. And then they told us that the next thing we were going to do, we were going to be going to Southeast Asia. So we went on. We were getting ready for a MEW pump, so which was a Westpac, a 31st MEW. And so we started doing jungle warfare exercises and everything like that. And we MEW raid leaders course and loading armored vehicles and running armored vehicles up on LCACs or LCACs, which is landing craft air cushions, that are piloted by the Navy. And, so we got all that done, and we went down to Okinawa, and we went to Guam, and we went to, and basically it was just, what we are is QRF for the West. In case anything goes down, there's a large ready force that's already floating in the water.
Quick reaction force.
Quick reaction, ready to handle anything within the region. Had a good time, you know, visited the Philippines, Guam, went to Japan, spent a lot of time on Okinawa and snorkeling in the reef and stuff like that on my free time.
Well, that was a far break from being in the middle of the desert getting shot at.
No, and I liked the desert, but I liked the jungle, but the jungle's a lot fiercer place because there's nothing in the desert essentially besides the camel spiders that's trying to eat you on a constant basis. I remember one night being in the jungle, and there's things that are iridescent, or they glow, they're luminous, they have bioluminescence to them. And one of the things that does is there's these worms on the floor of the jungle, and I picked one up and it bit me and they were glowing in the dark, and I thought, well, that's cool. So I picked one up and put it in my hand. I was like, that's neat. And it bit me and my hand swelled up, and it was real fun.
Lessons learned.
Lessons learned. But I thought it was neat, you know. A lot of things that you'll never see anywhere else. But no, we got done with that, and I came out, and then the next thing was Afghanistan, and they were asking if I was going to re-up, and I came back to the point where I remember that I never asked my wife, now my wife Courtney, what she thought when I went into the Marine Corps, and I said, hey, you know, I think that it's only fair that if we're going to have the relationship we have, especially since that I didn't ask in the first place, and I didn't even let you know until I did it, you know, it's like, I know what I want to do if I go to school, but I know what I'm going to do if I stay in, but I want you to be a large part of the decision-making process in this next step, especially since you were deprived of it in the first place. And she said she wanted me to come home. And I said, well, that's fine. I'll go ahead and come up with my school. And so, I rode dirt bikes all the time on my free time when I was in 29 Palms. So I knew I liked motorcycles. And so I ended up going to MMI Phoenix, Arizona. And I worked on BMWs, Kawasaki, and went to Yamaha Pro and worked on Yamahas and stuff like that. And then I ended up going back to Montana and took care of myself in Montana. And I tried to take care of myself by myself. And a lot of things that I had gone through, I tried to deal with by myself. And it nickeled and dimed us hospital-wise and whatnot. And I know that we ended up, I ended up going and getting the help I needed from the VA with my dad, because my dad was get your help. And I never did, and I tried to do it by myself. Well, it was just emotionally and financially crippling. So I ended up doing that and getting that taken care of. So thanks, Pop, for pushing me that direction. So,
That's what Homeward Bound's about, taking care of our veterans. And how could I take care of people that are strangers to me without taking care of my own son?
Well, sure. And I appreciate that very much. And, you know, and just me being hard-headed and impatient, I didn't want to have to do anything. I figured if I volunteered in the first place, I could volunteer to take care of myself afterwards. And, for anybody that's listening that feels the same way as I did initially, you need something. Get it taken care of. Just because I just didn't know how to handle people, because, you know, people are, you know, you join the military, you're not people anymore.
Especially the Marine Corps.
Yeah, so you come back and just dealing with people, you know, you just can't mentally wrap your head around why it seems like that we can't function on the same level sometimes, and it's just and that was mentally taxing too. If you're needing some help, get some help. You know, talk to somebody, you know. And I'm still just as high strung. You know, I feel a little better about it.
Well, I guess you could call it intervention. I saw that you needed help. We literally drove to Montana and grabbed you and brought you back home for almost a year so you could get your life back in order and get things straight, because I know there was a lot of suicides in your team after they came back, and I did not want you to be one of those numbers. I wanted you to be part of our family for the rest of our lives.
No, and I don't understand that. No, we lost several guys. We had guys that were doing great, and you couldn't kill them overseas, came back and killed themselves. And I can't wrap my head around. It seemed like I quit answering my phone because whenever I'd see an out-of-state number, because it was always a guy telling me that somebody had gone ahead and committed suicide. So I didn't have the finances, and I didn't feel like it was anyone else's responsibility to pay for me to go and do that. So I never asked for help to go to these funerals, and I never went to any of them. And I guess I just didn't want to see them, and I didn't, you know, if I wasn't there, it didn't happen.
Right.
You know.
It's a way of dealing with it.
And I can remember the last...